it would certainly sanctify that. That is the people's lawyer. The attorney generals call themselves that, but really, in de facto, it's the governor's lawyer.
Should Alaskans elect the state's attorney general? From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Tuesday, February 11th. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, Keegan Randall's tough finish in the Olympic skate sprint.
She spent a huge amount of time preparing to win this race, but also some of the preparation was preparing in the event that she didn't win the race.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by Rural Energy Enterprises, supplying Alaska dealers with fuel-efficient Toyo stoves and Oil Miser heaters for more than 26 years. Local dealers can be found at rural-energy.com. And by ConocoPhillips. The easy oil is gone, and getting to the remaining oil will be a challenge that will require the state and the industry to work together. ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company.
Alaska is just one of seven states in the country that does not elect its attorney general. A constitutional amendment that's moving through the legislature would change that, APRN's Alexander Gutierrez reports.
During every legislature of the past decade, someone has introduced a measure that would put the office of attorney general up to a vote. It's been offered by Republicans, it's been pushed by Democrats, and every time the idea hasn't gone anywhere. That is, until now. Representative Bill Stoltz, a Chugiak Republican, is carrying the measure this time, and he's actually getting hearings on it. On Tuesday, he told the House State Affairs Committee that it's an issue of accountability. If the attorney general is elected instead of appointed,
it would certainly sanctify that is the people's lawyer. Often the attorney generals call themselves that, but really, in de facto, it's the governor's lawyer.
The attorney general is one of the most powerful offices in Alaska state government. As head of the Department of Law, the attorney general defends the state in court and makes recommendations on what statutes, regulations, and even citizens' initiatives are constitutional. Stoltz can think of a recent example of the attorney general exerting considerable influence over state policy. Last month, the current attorney general signed off on an opinion that an initiative to ban commercial set netting operations in the state's urban waters would be unconstitutional. Stoltz believes that if you have some control over what voters can decide, the voters should have some say in who's in that position.
That bothers me a little bit. Not the content of the initiative, but an assistant attorney general has more power than the people of Alaska.
While some members of the State Affairs Committee expressed support for the measure, there were questions and concerns. A couple of members of the committee wondered if electing an attorney general could lead to conflict between that office and the governor. One Democrat noted that potential for friction could be a risk as the state pursues a complex natural gas mega project. But mostly, members of the committee wondered if electing the attorney general would make the office overly political. Shelley Hughes, a Palmer Republican, couched her support for the measure with that caveat.
I value the intelligence of the citizens of Alaska and would hope and pray that it wouldn't become a beauty contest and a public speaking contest, which sometimes elections can be.
Stoltz says putting the office of attorney general to a vote wouldn't make the office more political. It would just change who's playing politics.
Anybody who has watched attorney generals in the state of Alaska, no, they already are political by nature.
Because it is a constitutional amendment, the measure needs two-thirds approval from the legislature and a majority vote of Alaska citizens. In Juneau, I'm Alexander Gutierrez.
Congress is working this week to protect military pensions from inflation. The U.S. House voted today to restore a cut to the cost of living allowance for retirees, and the Senate last night voted to move forward with a bill to do the same. The Senate bill was co-sponsored by Alaska Senator Mark Begich, and on the procedural vote, it passed 94-0. Still, as APRN's Liz Ruskin reports, the bill's fate is uncertain.
When Congress passed its budget blueprint in December, the most controversial element was a $6 billion savings in military pensions. The idea was to dip the cost of living allowance for veterans of working age, then restore full inflation proofing once a veteran reaches age 62. Even before word of it stirred outrage among veterans, lawmakers of both parties were pledging to roll back the cut. At least a dozen bills were filed. The only one Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid decided to move forward was sponsored by Begich and three other Democrats. On the Senate floor, Begich urged colleagues to just pass the bill with no amendments.
Very, very simple. You vote yes, you're for our vets. You vote no, you're against our vets. That's it.
Some Republicans, though, are insisting on an offset, $6 billion from somewhere else to avoid adding to the deficit. Senator Lindsey Graham of South Carolina is among them.
The good news is everybody in the body wants to undo the damage done to our military retirees. That's good news. The bad news is we're doing it in a fashion that would break the budget agreement. And I just don't think that should be our choice.
Alaska Senator Lisa Murkowski has previously backed a plan to pay for the COLA restoration by not allowing illegal immigrants to claim the child credit on their taxes. The House version extends a cut to Medicare for an extra year. Begich says some Republicans are trying to sink the bill because of the senators sponsoring it. Himself, Mark Pryor of Arkansas, Gene Shaheen of New Hampshire, and Kay Hagan of North Carolina. All four are Democrats up for re-election this year in some of the tightest races in the country. The leadership's decision to bring this particular bill to the floor gives them a chance to save the day for veterans. The Senate fight continues this week. In Washington, I'm Liz Ruskin.
It's a disappointing day for Keegan Randall and her fans. The Anchorage skier failed to medal in the Olympic skate sprint in Sochi, an event many thought she would win. Randall missed advancing to the semifinals by a tiny margin, 0.05 of a second. She was gracious with the heartbreaking result, saying she was happy to be in the fight and gave it everything she had. Nathaniel Herz is covering the Olympics for FasterSkier.com and the Anchorage Daily News. He watched the race today and says in the quarterfinals, Randall was facing two of her toughest competitors.
I talked to Keegan's coach, and he said that their plan was to have her lead into the corner after the downhill because it was a tight corner. It was kind of sloppy conditions and had the potential to be sort of a dangerous spot to be not in the lead, because if you're behind and the person in front of you crashes, you're going kind of too fast to be able to react. So she led through that corner, and then they sort of turned after that corner, there's a straight stretch, and then they turned back into the home stretch. And on that first straight stretch, Keegan had been leading, but that essentially gave her opponents the ability to sort of sit behind and build up some momentum because they're not in the wind. And they sort of came around her heading into the home stretch and basically just left her behind there. It was super close, but you know, I think there was this tactical move to be in the front. And then also it sounded like on the home stretch, she just didn't quite have enough energy for whatever reason, whether it was fitness or something else, to be able to keep up when it really mattered. And, you know, her coach, Eric Flora, said, you know, when it comes to fitness, it's sort of hard to tell. He thinks that'll become more clear if she's having some problems there during the rest of the races here in Russia.
Nathaniel, Keegan worked 8 years toward this goal. What have you heard about how she seems to be handling this disappointment?
You know, I saw her talking with her husband right after she finished and, you know, just looked a little bit shocked. And one of my colleagues said, you know, they saw her in tears and clearly distraught. But then, you know, she went through the whole media rigmarole. I did talk to her briefly. She said she had to give the same answers about 10 times. But then she actually stuck around all the way through the end of the race, even though she wasn't competing, because one of her teammates made it all the way to this final round and actually was kind of in medal contention, though she ended up kind of getting caught up in a crash. And was sort of out there smiling, talking with her teammates. And, you know, I mean, I think there's no doubt that this is sort of totally devastating, but she's a professional. And I think, you know, one of the things her coach said, and we kind of talked about this, is that, you know, I think she spent a huge amount of time preparing to win this race, but I think as part of that, also some of the preparation was preparing in the event that she didn't win the race.
Keegan's Olympics aren't over. What will she compete in next?
Well, there are a couple other events in which the U.S. actually has a shot at a medal. Certainly not, you know, this was kind of the event where Keegan really was the favorite, or at least among two favorites. And, you know, this was the best shot. But then the team sprint is another event where the Americans will be pretty strong. And much later in the games, one of the last events is the relay, where you have four women who each ski a leg of 5 kilometers. And the American women right now, they're extremely deep, and there's the potential for those guys to be in contention for sure.
Keegan is 31. The skate style sprint won't be back for another 8 years. Do you think this is it for her, or could she come back again?
You know, I haven't talked to Keegan about that. I talked to her coach about that a little bit today, and he was a little cagey. You know, it sounds like I think Keegan talked to Beth Bragg with the Daily News earlier this week or earlier this winter, and she may have mentioned something about wanting to race on the circuit while starting a family and maybe having a child. And so what Eric Flora, her coach, told me today was that, you know, she wants to keep racing, and that, you know, we're likely to see her continue race in some form. She's improved a lot in the other disciplines, in the other types of races over the last few years. And I think it's not reasonable to think about seeing her at the next Olympics in 4 more years, even though there's not her preferred skate sprint. She could be a good enough classic sprinter by then. That's what Eric was kind of pondering today. So yeah, that remains to be seen.
Anchorage Daily News reporter Nathaniel Herz is covering cross-country skiing in Sochi for ADN and FasterSkier.com. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, musher Brent Sass talks about the accident that cost him a Yukon Quest win.
No race, no win, nothing is worth sacrificing the health and well-being of myself or the dogs.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. An artist is a person who expresses themselves creatively through words, images, sounds, materials, or original performance. If you are an artist, you might be eligible for funding to support your creative work. March 1st is the deadline to apply for an individual artist award. Visit Rasmussen Foundation on Facebook or on the web at rasmussen.org for more information. This message sponsored by Rasmussen Foundation.
The Fairbanks Chamber of Commerce isn't giving up on the Flint Hills refinery. Flint Hills announced last week that it plans to cease crude oil processing at the North Pole plant and turn the facility into a distribution depot for fuel shipped in from other facilities. Fairbanks Chamber Board Chair Steve Lundgren says the organization will work with the state to try to find a new owner-operator for the refinery.
Our main goal, hopefully, is to keep that plant operating in some capacity, so it's not just a terminal, so they're not just shipping oil in. We think that's going to, we'll lose the jobs if that happens, and it's very likely that oil will be higher priced than it is now.
Lundgren stressed potential local impacts if the refinery ceases production, including to Golden Valley Electric Association.
GVA buys some of their oil from Flint Hills. They'll have to find another source. It's possible that that source might be higher priced. And so if that happens, electric rates may go up. Some of the products for asphalt are developed by Flint Hills. And if that resource goes away, that'll have to be shipped in from outside. It may also potentially increase costs for our road construction here in the interior.
The refinery's closure is scheduled for this summer, and Lundgren says if it can't be averted, the chamber will work to find jobs for the 80 people who will be laid off. In late 2010, the Tok School fired up its new biomass boiler to heat the school. By 2013, it was providing electricity as well and saving the school district about $350,000 per year. Now those same scrubby trees will help grow fresh vegetables for the district's students. As part of our ongoing look at energy in Alaska, APRN's Ann Hillman reports on the transformation.
This is the story of how this turned into this. And then this.
Spinach, kale, regular lettuce.
It all starts with a massive pile of wood chips made from trees, cut to reduce wildfire risks near the community of Tok, which is surrounded by thick stands of spruce. The chips feed onto a thin conveyor belt that slowly dumps them into a giant boiler.
We put 3 pounds of wood into the boiler.
That's Scott McManus, the school district's assistant superintendent. He's the major force behind this innovative project. He explains the efficient wood boiler produces steam for a turbine that powers the school. Then, the steam warms up glycol that heats the school. The combined heat and power system saves the school district enough money to employ a counselor and a music teacher.
So we're on number 23.
No, I'm not ready.
Tok's fifth graders are just starting to get the hang of their instruments in Ruth Fastenau's music class. High school senior Claire Burnham helps them out.
It was amazing. We used to have one, but it ended my third grade year. And so when we found out it was coming back, a lot of us were really excited to have music again.
Burnham will study music at UAF in the fall. Meanwhile, back at the power plant, McManus says that even after the new facility heated the entire school.
We have all this extra heat. Let me see how we have all the doors open. We're just blowing heat out into the air right now.
McManus says initially they wanted to build a heat loop to provide warmth to other community buildings, but they couldn't find the funding for the project. So while they refined that idea, some of the heat is being pumped into a commercial greenhouse.
The floor is made of wood chips as insulation. Better than foam. We can lay the beds right on it. You can see in here right now, I don't know what the temperature is, but it's probably 70 degrees.
In front of McManus, rows of old highway guardrails are filled with soil. As soon as there's enough daylight, they'll be planted with vegetables to feed the district's students.
What did I say? Spinach, kale, regular lettuce, probably not too much head lettuce. And then that's what we're going to do right now because we're wanting to get the salad bar going this spring. So we'll actually have food in the kids' plates this spring. And I'll send you a picture of a plate full of lettuce. That would be awesome.
In the summer, they'll plant things like tomatoes and onions that can be processed into sauces and salsas and preserved for winter. Food services coordinator Danny Rutledge says there's a practical reason for the school to grow vegetables.
Stuff might last longer because a lot of times by the time we get something, it's already a week or two or a month old, so the preservation time will be longer. And one of our goals is to have less preservatives in our food.
The school district is considering cooking and freezing hundreds of pounds of lasagna using the summer vegetables instead of buying it pre-made. Rutledge says they also want the kids to be able to connect to their foods, even though it's primarily a commercial enterprise.
We want to bring the kids out there. We want them to see the process of growing your own vegetables and processing your own vegetables.
Part of the process is caring for the soil and adding nutrients, which takes us back to the biomass plant and a barrel of ash cleaned from the boiler.
What do you do with your ash?
We use it for fertilizer, just wood ash.
Sometimes, though, it's not only wood ash at the bottom of the boiler. McManus says they briefly had a problem with dirty wood. The silica-heavy pine needles melted in the boiler and left chunks of glass. McManus says they've had to work through some kinks in the system, but for the most part, the project has gone smoothly.
There's nothing in here that's not been tried and proven. We had a little bit of tweaking to do. We had some design issues related to an Arctic environment.
He says they hope to begin planting vegetable starts in mid-February. In Tok, I'm Ann Hillman.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Doyon Limited, announcing the 2014 Board of Directors election beginning January 22nd. Early bid proxy submission needed by Friday, February 14th. Information at doyon.com. And by BP Alaska. As part of their commitment to Alaska, BP and their employees are investing in over 400 education and service organizations in communities across the state. More at alaska.bp.com. The State of Alaska Department of Revenue reminds you to file online now for your 2014 PFD. Paper applications are located in your community. More information at pfd.alaska.gov or on Facebook. This message sponsored by the State of Alaska.
The Yukon Quest race organization held a press conference with Brent Sass this morning. The musher discussed the accident that led to a serious concussion and took him out of this year's race. KUAC's Emily Schwing reports.
Brent Sass says he let his dog team down.
I've always had ambitious schedules and always wanted to run a race like this race, and we were able to do it.
But he stands by his decision to press the help button on his GPS spot tracker after he fell from his sled and smacked his head on some lake ice.
No race, no win, nothing is worth sacrificing the health and well-being of myself or the dogs. So, or the credibility of the race as well. I mean, you have to think about all that when you're out there.
The 34-year-old says he's recovering well, but he still has a raging headache and numbness in his hands. He says the accident has forced him to reflect on what he can do differently.
I definitely feel like I wore myself out to the point where I was falling asleep on the back of the sled and could not help it. And those are the things that I have to change.
Sass's race strategy has him blowing through most checkpoints on the Yukon Quest Trail. During this year's race, he didn't stop once in a checkpoint unless it was mandatory. Even though he admits he was not well rested, he says he does not support the addition of more mandatory downtime on the trail.
If we're scheduled to have to stop at the checkpoints, I can't run the race that I just ran. And the only reason that I was competing with Alan Moore and Hugh Neff is because I was on a completely different schedule and I was blowing through the checkpoints and Alan and I were leapfrogging the whole way. And I think it's amazing for me, it's amazing for Alan, it's amazing for the fans, the spectators, and the sport. And so I don't think that by giving more mandatory rest, it helps anything. I think as mushers, we have to do better.
Sass plans to wear a helmet when he's mushing for the rest of his life, if it's comfortable and safe in sub-zero temperatures. He's still planning to run this year's Iditarod. That race is a little over 2 weeks away. On the Yukon Quest Trail, I'm Emily Schwing in CarMax.
An acoustic guitar maker and a small sawmill are the winners of the inaugural Path to Prosperity contest. The business plan competition for Southeast Alaska entrepreneurs was sponsored by Ha'ani, the community development arm of Sea Alaska Corporation. The winning entrepreneurs will receive up to $40,000 in seed money for consulting services to develop their ideas. KTOO's Casey Kelly has more.
Two of the 12 finalists for the Path to Prosperity contest were guitar makers.
Got the news that I made the top 12 and I saw the list of people and I saw Tongass Guitars. I remember thinking that was my second choice of the name.
Kevin Skeek of Huna is co-owner of Raven Guitars.
And I was like, wait, who is this guy? How did this leak out? Who do I have to, you know?
Skeek eventually joined forces with Steve Helgeson, the other guitar maker in the contest. They chose Raven Guitars as the name for their business. Helgeson, who's from Wrangell, says they bonded at a small business boot camp the finalists attended in October.
It was obvious that we shared a passion for guitar building and had a common vision about guitar construction and design and aesthetic, and that we also shared a passion for natural resource sustainability and social sustainability and community sustainability. So really, we just had so much in common that it was kind of a no-brainer.
The company aims to use Southeast Alaska timber, mostly Sitka spruce, yellow and red cedar, to manufacture high-quality acoustic guitars. They have a few prototypes, which Helgeson says sound quite nice.
It's a very bright and strident sound. In my mind, it's similar to a mahogany guitar.
The other Path to Prosperity winner also uses Southeast Forest products. Wes Tyler and his wife Sue own Icy Straits Lumber and Milling in Huna. For years, they've been trying to expand their business into cabin construction and home building supplies. For the contest, Wes Tyler says the company rebranded that portion of its business as Alaska Legacy Homes and Products.
Through that, we're going to be able to open up our markets, develop log cabins or stick frame cabins with log features and things like that. We'll also be able to have packages of the different kinds of things that go into homes, like a siding package or a paneling package or trim package.
Like the guys from Raven Guitars, Tyler says he prefers to work with wood from the Tongass National Forest.
You can make anything you want to out of it, and it's the best around.
Path to Prosperity sponsors Ha'ani and the Nature Conservancy received 59 proposals for the 2013 contest. The 12 finalists were set up with consulting services, including the Small Business Boot Camp and help writing a business plan. The winners were selected based on the quality of their plan. Ha'ani President and CEO Russell Dick says the contest has three main goals.
Jobs, conservation, sustainability. I mean, that's what it's about. Being able to create a platform for employment and lifestyle in rural communities. Because rural communities drive the culture of our state, in my mind. And we want to be able to support that.
So what's next for the winners? Helgeson says Raven Guitars will use the financial award for more training, as well as marketing, branding, and imaging. They hope to open a manufacturing shop in Wrangell within the year.
We anticipated that in our first year, we're going to try to complete 44 guitars.
Within 5 years, he hopes to have about 10 full-time employees and be manufacturing 500 to 1,000 guitars per year. Tyler says the plan for using Alaska Legacy Homes Award is similar. He says they're thankful for the consulting services offered through the contest.
We've had experience in the where the rubber meets the road a whole bunch, but where it really counts and trying to figure out things, you know, in a business fashion, well, that was extremely valuable.
Path to Prosperity is a 4-year project. The Nature Conservancy and Ha'ani will accept proposals for this year's contest starting in March. The 2013 winners were announced at the Juneau Economic Development Council's third annual Innovation Summit. In Juneau, I'm Casey Kelly.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org, and you can follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Dan Bross in Fairbanks, Emily Schwing in Whitehorse, and Casey Kelly in Juneau. APRN's Alexandra Gutierrez reported from Juneau, Liz Ruskin from Washington, D.C., and Ann Hillman from Tok. Our editor and producer is Annie Feit. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Kristen Platt is our web producer. And I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
Alaska Premier Dental Group, offering restorative, preventive, and cosmetic dentistry with 3 offices, 2 in Anchorage and 1 in Wasilla. Description of services at smilealaska.com.
And by
the 2014 statewide BP Teachers of Excellence Program. Teacher nomination forms are available at bpteachers.com. Electronic health records free Alaskans from the paper chase by giving doctors, nurses, and families secure access to medical information when and where they need it. Electronic health records increase safety and security. Electronic records take health information out of the filing cabinet and into the digital light. You can find out more at ak-ehealth.org. This message is sponsored by the Alaska Department of Health and Social Services in partnership with the Alaska eHealth Network.
ANSEP, the Alaska Native Science and Engineering Program, gives Alaska Native students the inspiration and opportunity to excel in science and engineering careers, building a sustainable future for Alaska. More at ANSEP.net. This message sponsored by ANSEP.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.